Hello, it is Richard Hudson and Steve Levine with Ignite Consulting with this episode of Compliance and Cocktails. So just a quick introduction. Steve and I, we're, kind of tired of getting involved after someone got sued. And one of the foundations of Ignite was to kind of get out in front of that, right? To help businesses understand what they needed to do, right? To prevent them from getting in trouble. Like, what do you need to do to not violate that law? So in this podcast, we're going to bring on guests every week. We're going to talk about a lot of the leading compliance issues, whatever the issues of the day are in compliance. So sit back, make a cocktail, relax as we discuss these topics that impact you every day. As an aside here, every week we are required by federal, state, and local law to share stories from the trenches and the lessons that we learned from them. So the names have been removed to protect the innocent, and we'll visit those later in the podcast. So with that, I will have Steve introduce our guest today.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. For the record, I think this is another a month in a row I'm doing rum and Diet Coke, trying to avoid those carbs, not drinking as much beer. So that is my cocktail of choice. I believe Richard is sharing the same.
Yes, I am.
And our guest, Jessica Lesser, I think she didn't know about the cocktail rule, so I think she's got a nice coffee.
We'll forgive her this time. We'll have to have her on at another time with the cocktail or maybe at the conference.
So this you mentioned the conference, and this podcast is we kind of want to give a preview of our conference, Compliance Unleashed. We're in your corner, which is going to be held May 17th, 19th in DFW. And we are really excited about this event. We think there is no better training opportunity for compliance nerds like us in the auto finance space to all come together and learn from each other and network with each other and just come together as an industry with the same interests. So with that being said, we're going to be talking about the conference in general, and we thought no better person to have join us today than Jessica Lesser, who's an attorney.
She is a proven civil trial attorney with expertise in regulatory framework of consumer finance, lending, and technology. So that is the bio we'll have for our conference. But she is just an amazing person who has just worked on all different sides of these issues. And we're just privileged to have her here at this year's conference and privileged to have her on our
I'll
podcast.
brag about Jessica a little bit, because Jessica is not your average speaker. Because quite honestly, the average speaker at a lot of compliance conferences could be a little bit boring. Jessica is not boring. You'll know in about 30 seconds that she is not the norm. The great thing about Jessica, in addition to being lively and colorful and vibrant, is she's got a really diverse background. I mean, she's worked for AmeriCredit. She's worked as a plaintiff's lawyer. She's worked for the Attorney General of the state of Texas. She's got a really diverse background. She's seen a lot of things from different angles. And really, that's one of the reasons that we invited her to be our keynote speaker, because it's just a really interesting conversation with somebody that has such a broad range of experience. So with that, Jessica, thank you so much for joining us.
I am so excited to be here, and I'm so excited for the conference. One, because I believe education is the best thing that we can do in this nerdy world. And without a doubt, I think I'm the biggest nerd that ever existed, because I think finance and the finance codes are extremely interesting. They're a great read for me, and and nothing's better than cars. So you get cars and money. That is like a perfect combination mixed in with some technology and some lawyers. And I'm so excited to get to attend for myself to learn, because I think this is such a vital industry that is involved. People need transportation. I mean, that's the number one thing. And I serve as of counsel for a firm, Maurice Wucher, that we've always kind of specialized and work a lot in that compliance space and with organizations as well as litigation and class actions. But we've seen so many changes over the last year as a group that it's just a wild and woolly times that we're in right now. So there's no better time to really just kind of get
No,
together.
Especially with the new administration, and we all know that a lot of the federal stuff filters down to the state level. So,
do we really know anything right now?
We've seen a bunch of recensions and all kinds of stuff, but we don't know how that's going to filter down to the day to day, especially in our area, which are there are a lot of finance companies we work with, but also buyer pay here groups as well, and how that's going to filter from them. But so one of the things when we originally, when Steve brought the idea up of bringing you on, we thought it was an awesome idea, was because of your experience on both sides of these issues, right? From both the business side and the consumer side, especially with the AG. And so, we're in Texas, and I was a high school, and collegiate debate person. And I know we never knew which side we were defending until 20 minutes before the debate, right? They come in and tell you that. And so one question I want to ask to you with your unique experience and perspective is kind of, what is your take on how does having been on both sides bring you a better perspective, right?
Yeah, when I first started in my career, I was an intern at the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. And this was right in when home equity was going in. It was actually a change both in the commissioner and the general counsel. So it was a very active time. And I remember that's what kind of got me interested in all this stuff. And then I moved from there over to the AG's office. And I think it was, I always say I'm a consumer advocate. I operate in consumer protection. Yes, I defend companies that have been on both sides. But if you understand where that consumer side is coming from, if you understand that consumer viewpoint, it helps you become that relatable when you are representing or defending the other side. And,
almost like there is no other side. There's one side and it's the consumer, right?
When I left the AG's office on round one, because I was baby lawyer in round one, and then I went back, I think it was 2015. Ironically, I have worked for 1, 2, 3 attorney generals of Texas.
Wow.
But I only worked there total for 5 years, so go figure. But in that, you get to see a lot of transition. But when I switched to what I guess the other side was and went in-house, I always looked at the job was the same. I'm here to educate, and especially as a company, when I represent companies, one is to understand their business model, understand their issues, and guide in making decisions. You try to read that crystal ball, and that's where it's like there really isn't a side. You're trying to advise and inform and educate so decisions are made that are productive and profitable, where it should be not a negative, where I always looked at it as instead of like, oh, legal departments, compliance. No, make an opportunity at over it, because it's not always that this negative concept. And then it really can help a business thrive and come to the top of their game.
Being in this area, and I deal with a lot of consumer complaints too, because we answer them oftentimes on behalf of our clients as well. And so there's often a gap my perception between the business perception sometimes and the consumer perception. I actually don't think there's a gap. I actually think their interests are aligned. So, but have you perceived that gap? And if so, what do you do to help businesses and consumers kind of merge that gap so they better understand each other?
That's a really good question, or a good proposition, because when I was like, okay, put my schizophrenic brain on which side kind of it is or is there not one? I think one is for businesses to not go right in and dismiss what the consumer is saying outright. A lot of times that's a mistake I see, is that they just go, oh, that's not true. I also will say that when I have consumer clients and have been on that side, or when I was dealing with consumers in a regulatory action, don't necessarily take everything that's said there as agony. Now, this does not mean anybody's lying. And I think that's this misconception. Oh, they're a liar. Oh, they're this.
That's why I use the word perception from both sides. If businesses have perceptions and consumers have perceptions, and somewhere in the midst, there's a truth, right?
And if you're dealing in litigation, I'll tell you what, nobody cares what the business thinks or even the consumer. At the end of the day, the truth is neither one. It's litigation truth. And litigation truth is a whole different beast. Likewise, with maybe a regulator's perspective, which can be their end of life, it's their own. So all these kind of come together into something different. And that's where you just kind of, you kind of can't get overly emotional about, but it's hard for people when they're criticized and they know they try and do a great job. Like I know businesses, I represent, you know, people today that are like, we do so good. We didn't say these quoted words, you know, we didn't cuss them out. We have recordings. Yeah, but you gotta remember that consumer is already stressed usually, because usually these events come about from something I'm talking about collection, so because that's where you see a lot.
Right.
They're probably getting a few calls. There is a situation. So this financial burden that you're dealing with, so it's kind of just, I always tell, don't think anybody's lying. It's just, we're trying to find out facts. And that's all it becomes. It's just that they may have had a different perception of those facts.
Right. I mean, no, he's really big on that. And I'll tell you, he's taught me there are these situations where you could spend $10,000 fighting a particular issue where there may be a disagreement on that perception, right? Where it's just easier to look, just settle that disagreement out, however, fix the car, whatever the disagreement may be.
So let's see if you agree with this, because when I was in private practice, I noticed that there was this phenomenon that took place. My clients would get sued, come to me, and the first thing they would say, we're not settling, we're never settling, we're going to court, we didn't do it.
And yes, and always the first response.
Yeah, and I learned
why, you know.
I learned you just gotta let them go. You gotta let them go. And then after they get a couple of months of legal bills, they call back and say, this is ridiculous. We're spending more money than the case is worth. Let's get it settled. And I tell my clients now, because you know, don't get emotional. You have to look at it logically and in your mind, jump ahead a couple of months and figure out where you're going to be 3-4 months down the road once the discovery is done. And let's get this thing worked out.
And or if there is, I tell clients, hey, ironically, I spent a good part of my private practice career when I was on what the consumer side was, although I did represent some companies and some regulatory stuff. But I did a lot of what would be called debt defense. So basically, you know, my clients were being sued on a debt. And I always speak often about it, trying to educate attorneys. I would have that defendant come into my office and they're out, you know, they're emotional because they were sued, you know, and it's stressful. I mean, so they would have that same, it doesn't matter if you're a business, a consumer, when you have a lawsuit filed, or you get a demand letter, or you get just something in the mail.
It's stressful, yeah.
Anxiety. And so they would honestly have the same response each time. That is normal. And so when I talk to clients, regardless of it, I would kind of say, you know, yes, that sucks. I understand you try hard. You know, we look at it as a learning opportunity to see maybe there's some improvement to do, but to, you know, we just got to get through this roadblock, get through this step and evaluate and make good decisions. I'm perfectly happy. I mean, when I was defending on consumer suits, my business model, because I basically it was a business, was to defend it all the way to trial. And I will say that, yes, rarely do I have an actual defense. My clients owe the money. I mean, I pretty much, that was no. But it was whether or not somebody could prove it. When you're on that defense side, can you really establish that? And I was able to do that for people on a flat basis because it was so routine and different. But that's what's different about some of the companies when they're being sued, whether it's for consumer protection. It's tough because each case is a little different. You're dealing with lots of different issues and investigating. And, you know, it's up to that client to decide, hey, I'm ready to go all the way. And or do we look at, you know, resolving it what it is? But it is emotional. I mean,
So if there was a lesson for, let's say, folks that might be listening to this that in our world are mostly probably going to be businesses, you know, how to approach maybe a best practice on how to approach consumers that you've dealt with that would help facilitate the best outcome to their issue. Well, how should businesses react?
I mean, the current clients that I work with are all real. I mean, I have to say I've really been lucky because they evaluate things, even though it's like, you know, they've got good practices. And I've seen like web these consumer and the consumer attorneys. I think you just have to talk to them and you develop relationships. Ironically enough, some of my best friends are my opposing counsel. How I know Mr. Levine is from an opposing counsel on a case, and it's how we were introduced, you develop those relationships, just like with courts, because at the end of the day, what a lawyer's job in that litigation or in a regulatory where you're interacting on behalf of is to do so in all cases with integrity, because your reputation is what somebody is hiring you for. You know, and so explaining and keeping that reputation. And you know, that can sometimes be, that's why I always say, don't ever think anybody's a liar. We just have different perceptions. They may be mistaken. It's not, you know, we're just trying now to discover things of what really is, and then that litigation truth, trial truth.
I love what you just said, reputation, because we talk our clients all the time about, you almost have to put aside who's right or who's wrong, who could prove what. And do you really want people in your community to think of you, you know, that you did this? Do you want them reading this on social media? Do you want to risk having a newspaper article? And I think most of our clients, a lot of them are small businesses and their reputation is valued above all.
And they're small communities. Yeah. Sometimes small towns like, you know, Hot Springs or Allen, Texas.
I want to ask you a question, and I'm hoping you're going to touch upon this at the conference, but I think it's so interesting. Again, give me your background. So you're a plaintiff's lawyer, you're a regulator. When a case walks into your door, do you analyze those cases the same way? Or how is it different? No. Okay, so tell me.
In a way, no. When I was a plaintiff's lawyer on the consumer side, my case now, if I was doing a flat fee debt defense thing, that was very much formula. I mean, it took a while to develop that process, but there was definitely a method to the madness. But when I would take a case of representing, I actually was a lot pickier over time. I looked for good guy, bad guy, harm. Okay, those are usually always the facts, and I think from
what was harm? So we're talking to a bunch of dealers here, you know, it's going to be our audience. So, and the folks listening here. So when you say as a plaintiff's attorney, you're looking for harm, what specific things with regards to collections, sales in the automotive industry? What kind of things did you look for?
I mean, and harm could be described in so many different ways, but a lot of times it would have been where, because, you know, you can have those economic losses. You can have this, you know, mental anguish when you're dealing with the Deceptive Trade Practices Act in Texas. It's very different than what people think about. And then when you add trouble, and I hate to always say, I'm not saying that my defendants were bad guys. It's just my way of kind of wanting to show that, and I would use my example always was they didn't care. You know, they took money over doing something right. You know, you have a greed because that's what a jury, and that's looking at a case that's going from a jury kind of level. Because when you talk to a jury, that's the way you have to talk to a jury, is you have to be able to demonstrate that. Sometimes that is difficult because that harm. So what does that mean? And I think as a lawyer, you evaluate things of a lot of times there's that time value of money. And there is that, especially like in collection of it, and there are many different models I would use at it, but I never really wanted just a pure, like what I would say, statutory damage case. My client needed to be able to express how this action or something was hurtful, was harmful.
Like they were denied credit somewhere else. They couldn't get a car, they couldn't get a house, something like that.
They had to have a story because, and that was when you're looking for a case for that jury, because I've had enough cases where, and I often would look for things that were clean on liability. Yeah, if you knew you had liability, damn. Hard part was it's that sliding scale. So you have to be able to have, when you're risking, because a lot of times the plaintiff's lawyer, you're not being paid as much up front. So there is that, you want to take the right case.
Let me stop you because I want you to put a nail in the coffin. I hear so many dealers, so many finance companies, they all say, they can't sue me. They're never going to be able to find a lawyer. They've got no money. False.
No, because lawyers aren't getting paid. And that's the reality is.
The sharpest tools in the shed.
You have what you end up having, this consumer protection, the origins of these statutes back in 1900, was an understanding that sometimes the damage is $100. Okay. I can find $100 in damages in any case. I can find almost on any dealer paper a violation of something to get me the $100. So what you're really looking at then is you really are looking at attorney's fees.
Right. Because
they're all fee shifting. And that's the law was designed because it was understood like going back in time of where there was the cramming. Okay. So when you had to tell it, you had bad, companies that were cramming things on your phone bill, you didn't know it, and they were all like 13 cents a piece. There was an understanding that, okay, who's going to take the $2 case? Now, unless there's fee shifting that goes on. And that's really where it's powerful is that fee shifting. And even though there could be disagreements about, well, that shouldn't be, once an attorney accepts a case, just start up adding up the time, it adds up quickly, very fast. And so that's kind of where I think it's I personally like to have some allocation of harm because I thought of everything as needing to go to a jury. If I was going to get pushed to the jury or I wanted to, I wanted to be able to explain it. And when I always say like that, my client as a consumer, I wanted them likable. Because juries don't really like to give people money who aren't likable. And this has nothing to do with the law. Likewise, sometimes people like to give money to people when they don't like the others. So it's.
Well, that's a good question. And Steve's been on the defense side of this. I'm sure you've been on both sides. So oftentimes when I do training with collectors and I talk about collections notes and internal emails where they're potentially not professional about the way they speak about their customers internally, that's potentially an issue. And also within collections notes where individuals post something that may not be professional, as in my opinion, that could be damaging if it's read in front of a jury. Have you ever had an example where that something like that happened?
Yeah, I think in any environment I would say my motto was always show that you care. If you show that you care, you're probably gonna be all right. Show that you care in what you do, and be accurate. When now years back, and I think there's been huge improvements in industries all around, by the way. But those notes, don't be afraid to put what really happened, because now most things are recorded. As a lawyer, if I was either in-house counsel reviewing something, or if I'm outside counsel, You really want to know what you want to have an accuracy. Again, let me know what I'm dealing with, because then I don't want to be surprised. I always say I want to know what the gremlins are, because once you know what and that's the same thing of representing plaintiffs is, a lot of time I spent like, okay, I want to know what the gremlin is of what,
But if you're representing your business and you discover this information as part of your investigation, is the plaintiff's attorney able to access that, or do you have a responsibility to disclose that if there's something that's exculpatory or damaging maybe to your case?
It's gonna happen. I mean, that's the thing. That's what you hire people to deal with things for. On the topic of like regulatory stuff, it definitely is. I think it is, it is worse to me to not know, because then when you find out later, I've had cases where really there wasn't that much done wrong, but the cover up or the lack of accuracy, because what it does is it calls into question then everything else of reliance on documents and notes and your story. Your credibility goes at issue at that point. Your policy, if you have a policy, does that mean that, do you really care about enforcing that? So I think, sometimes problems happen. That's just what it is. Sometimes there is a problem.
Mistakes are made, right? No matter how good your policy procedures are, sometimes people just screw up, right?
Yeah, it's gonna happen. People lose their, nothing is perfect all the time. And that's okay. It's just, what do you do then? Because what you're wanting is the overall, your reputation as a company, is it good, And I'm just talking in that kind of, that's what compliance really is about. And so encouraging, because just like I want those notes, that's always evidence for your one way or another. There's plenty of times where, that's why you want to have that reliance, because there's always a plan to deal with it. We can always deal with the problem. You just want to know internally, I think, especially for a business, forget about, lawyer, internally, you want to know, you'd rather have the information so you make the right decision up front and look at, it's just knowledge. At the end of the day, it's just knowledge.
Well, we're talking with Jessica Lesser, who is our keynote speaker at Compliance Unleashed 2021, May 17th, DFW. And Jessica, you're going to be speaking Monday afternoon, the 17th. Are you going to be able to join us for cocktails afterwards?
Actually, got my room the whole time. So my intention is to be there the whole time.
Amazing.
I think that that's where that information of learning really comes from. It helps me every day in what I do. And, it's just that sharing, because you get ideas, you get inspiration. Because there's really sometimes no right or wrong answer. I've always said, the worst thing people can do is just not answer, not have,
Right.
But then also human nature is to like put our heads in the sand and ignore things. So it's these ideas of being able to have those dialogues that continue. So yeah, I'm very excited
about it. I'm super glad that
you're going to be there. Yeah, we're Thursday night, Tuesday night. We're going to have
We're going to have a great
Cowboys Club.
We've got a great slate of speakers all day Tuesday. We've got some dealers speaking. We've got Bill Metzinger, who's a dealer in Pennsylvania. He's going to talk about how his business virtually transformed through the COVID virus and the shutdowns and all the things he had to do.
To go virtual. So.
And then Richard's brother, Robbie, is going to be talking about information security and IT issues. Then we've got some great industry speakers. Dave Brotherton of NIADA is going to be talking collections, and I've seen his collections presentation. He is a wonderful trainer. Brent Carmichael of NCM is going to be sharing a lot of his audit points and just best practices for managing dealerships. So we've really got a slate of great content.
Including and starting with you as our keynote. So we're very excited to have you.
Was keynote speaker makes me feel all special and fancy. True story, I've been practicing walking around in heels again since over the last year. I've been wearing yoga pants and flip-flops. So I'm starting to see if I can wear heels, but that may not quite be there. I might just, you know, I never thought I'd have
to. You know, hey, it's Texas, so if you have a shirt that doesn't have too many holes in it, a pair of blue jeans, you'll probably be all right.
I like my shoes, you know, that makes you feel good, though, but I'm practicing with my shoes.
We're so excited to have you. We're excited to have you on the podcast today. I think this is a really good conversation that folks that we talk to on a day-to-day basis don't often have or don't contemplate even. Those different sides of things and kind of how to look at it. And to me, again, like you said, it's about starting with the consumer first. And if everyone agrees that we start with the consumer first, then we all have the same starting line, right?
Well, and I think the auto industry, whether you're a dealer self-financing or it's a great industry, but it does have more regulations, I think. There's just a lot, you need to be a little more conscious because I think you're a little more susceptible. But there's, I think coming up in the year, you know, months to come, is it's going to be more and more important, this industry, especially when on the financing end of like even the buy here, pay here, is because there is a need in the marketplace. And there's a service in the marketplace. And so it's just, just getting an understanding.
Wonderful.
We are super excited to have you at the conference. We're super excited that you joined us today. I think that one of the things that we notice at other industry conferences is you kind of get used to the same old, same old, the same old cadence, the same old issues. And in building our curriculum, we try to break the mold and bring in different speakers with different points of view. So we are thrilled that you're going to be joining us because I think your background and experience is just so fascinating.
Background that no one can decide what I want to be when I grow up. Is that what it kind of looks like?
Steve and I are still trying to figure that out. So.
In some ways it's always the same. It's just providing good information, good advice, and solving problems. Like when I say I have a problem, you solve problems and you help whoever it is you're helping. I'm thrilled. I'm just so excited there's gonna be an audience that's live and it won't be a Zoom presentation.
I'm tired of Zoom presentations.
Everyone's Zoomed out, so.
Yeah, I just that's just not my venue. I like to walk around, or I don't know. I kind of make it up a lot of times, I think, when I do presentations as I go along. But there's an idea in there somewhere.
We're excited to have you there, and especially now that this is breaking news. Jessica Lester's going to be there for the conference. So it's breaking news and we're excited to have you there. You'll be able to talk with our clients, many of them right here in Texas.
What is your favorite?
What now?
What's your favorite drink?
I'm thinking you're breaking up.
What is your favorite drink? Because I know that people are going to want to buy you drinks.
Oh, my favorite cocktail. I typically am a Stoli and tonic person. I'm very basic. But I've learned to be cheaper. I'm okay with just a well vodka and tonic as jobs change and so on. I'm good with just well now. Me and the microphone on your end is breaking up.
He's bringing in some Kentucky moonshine, one of our other guests. So.
You know what? When I was in law school, a friend of mine, and we both had done some studying at ADEM of biochemistry. And so, you know, then I went law. We wanted to brew beer. And so we decided to brew our own beer and we called it a Boonshine because his last name was Boone. And so we make Boonshine is what it was. But I can tell you, it wasn't any good. And I was in charge. It was my fault, but you know, and then lately I've been trying to But, you know, back to the good old red wine, because according to my little thing, you know, a glass of red wine a day is okay. And it actually can increase your minutes of life.
One glass.
Yeah. One glass, yeah. Maybe. And then like, you know, I'm going to get a sign in my office that says this to me. So I'm like, you know, one glass is okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm like John Boehner, you know, like, what's a glass? Is it a gallon?
Kind of the problem is I learned of like when they like really start looking at like portion control or something, especially during COVID, it's like, really, that's what a portion is of something? And I'm like, yeah. Like three times,
FYI, just because those folks aren't allowed on our show. So anyone with that kind of portion control, approved.
Yeah, they're going to the alternate conference.
Yeah, but no, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a really, really great time. I'm looking forward to just, hey, I'm going to get out of the house. I'm going to put some real clothes kind of on, real shoes. I'm leaving the house. This is exciting.
I'm with you 1,000%. I think so many of the folks attending are excited. I'm with you 1,000%. I'm super excited to be meeting with people in person again. This is going to be great.
Just to have a conversation is great. I mean, sometimes I have like a telemarketer call me and I actually start talking to him just because I want somebody to talk to. So, you know.
We'll make up for that times 10 and 2.5 days. I think everyone's going to have more than their fair share of interactions and fun. It should be a blast. But again, we are super excited to have you. We're privileged to have you. You just have so much experience in this area. Every side of the issues, and I don't think there's a better person for us to use as our have as our keynote to talk to our customers. So thank you.
I'm just so pleased to be there. As I said, I love what I get to do, no matter what it is, and you know, I like what I do, even though a lot of people are like, really? What's the consumer? Really? You know, but to me, it's fun, you know.
No, it's great. I think there's a lot of middle ground. I think that goes back to our question about working on different sides, and the debate question of having to defend different sides of different arguments, and being trying to understand what's at the center of that, right? Which is the consumer ultimately, right? So whether you're suing someone as a plaintiff's attorney, or whether you're defending them, or whether it's a regulatory enforcement action, I think the important thing to remember, and everyone who's going to listen to this and everyone at the conference needs to remember, that it's the consumer that's at the center of this, right? And if we maintain that focus, no matter what you're doing, if you maintain the focus of doing the right thing by the consumer, you're off to a good start, right?
So show that you care. I mean, if you show that you care, if mistakes happen, that's a lot easier to defend any day, whether it's through licensing, through an administrative agency, through a regulatory, you know, when you go in like that, you know, that attitude, and that's not what's written in the law, but in a way, that's what consumer protection laws are really about, you know.
It's a spirit, right? It's a spirit. And when you talk about, especially about jury trials, which you mentioned, you don't, oftentimes juries, they're not attorneys. So what you really get down to in a lot of those cases is really the spirit of the law, right? And what the attorneys argue on either side is the spirit of the law was followed or not. Was something fair or was it not fair, right?
I mean, so something early on in trial advocacy is, you know, what story are you going to tell the jury? Yeah. It's got to be something compelling.
And I can always tell that I've won cases I never should have won. I've lost cases I really shouldn't have lost. That's the nature of it. That's why I say at the end of the day, it's litigation truth.
But in the end, it never hurts to, in all internal and external communications, to be super duper pro-consumer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where I found where cases where, yeah, there's an issue. You know, if you're likable, I mean, that's, you know, even in collection, if that collection's like, it's just, that's there. It's like those communications. You just, to me, you always got to think that there is somebody auditing it. and to, but if also if something did kind of go awry, you know, own it. That's what you would tell your child.
Did you fix it? Did you own it and fix it? Right. My 9-year-old, he messed something up. Did you own it and fix it? Right.
That's right. You know, it's just simple rules.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a real treat. And we look forward to seeing you.
All right. I look forward to seeing y'all soon. I know, 1 month or so away. Yay.
Yeah. We can't wait. Real person. Everyone's going to be there. We're super excited. Thank you for this.
Thank you. Thanks
can't
so
wait
much.
To meet you in person. This is going to be exciting.